You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Thursday, December 6th, 2035, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Tara Santa Maria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, folks.
So I have to say it's great to be back in Melbourne, but I'm...
Why did you laugh? Why was that? We worked for months to get this pronunciation correct.
There's no right or wrong. It's no right or wrong.
As recent as today, somebody sent us an email that explained how to say it yet again. They said drop all the vowels.
Right. Well, then they yell at us because, like, there's a difference between saying it properly and saying it with an accent.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to say it properly for an American.
Yeah, without an accent.
And I have no idea where in the spectrum of Melbourne to Melbourne to Melbourne.
Just don't say Melbourne. You're kind of safe.
But so it's great to be here, but I have to say I'm getting a little old for the 14-hour flights across the Pacific. Yeah. So, you know, it was just a couple of years ago that they brought back the supersonic commercial airliners, but they are still like 2031, I think it was. Yeah. But they are just still too expensive. You know, for schlubs like us.
I've done them before, though. They're worth it, you guys. I keep trying to convince you.
Of course you've done it. And probably first class within
the supersonic. What is it? What is it, like 6 hours across
there? Yeah, it's so much easier. It's like it's like it used to be when I'd fly from L.A. to New York.
And you don't hear the sonic boom anymore. They got rid of it.
No, it's super comfy. Yeah. Just fall asleep, wake up.
Well, Jay, the big breakthrough that allowed the supersonic transport to become viable again was the fact that they designed the shape. You've seen the shape. It's just a gorgeous, really elongated shape. That minimizes the sonic boom by like it's like a thousandth of what it used to be. And that's what was the big problem.
Yeah.
With this. Remember the old one, the Concorde.
Concorde. I mean,
and when did we first talk about that? It was like 15 years ago.
Long time.
Here we are, like just
remember,
coming
I saw it. Yeah. I think I saw it in a magazine the first time we were in this area.
Yeah.
And I said, look at this. This is something that's really going to be big in the future. And it was.
Yep.
It is.
It is.
You're right, Bob.
It's a tense shifting is hard from, like, you know, the U.S. to Australia.
Yeah.
Time traveling a little bit here.
So because it's 2035, so this is our 30th anniversary year of doing the SGU. And because of that, we're finishing up 30 years. We're going to talk about radio news items, but we're going to give more of a history, like where does this fit into the arc of science and skepticism over the last 30 years of the SGU, right? Mm-hmm. So Jay's going to start with a news item that has something to do with global warming. He didn't tell me what it is. But you're going to start by, you know, telling us where we've been, where we're going, where are we in this, you know, saga that we've been talking about, it seems like, for 30 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, when we first started talking about this, I don't even know when we first started talking about
global warming. I think right at the beginning, 2005, 2006.
Yeah. It was a mounting thing that as the years went by, we started to talk more and more about it. And then somewhere around the late 2020s, we really started to talk about it almost on every episode, to the point where listeners were emailing us saying, okay, we get it. Global warming is bad news. But we've seen a lot of bad things happen over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years where local governments or governments in general are doing absolutely nothing. They still can't get out of their own way, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we know that, but nothing has really been happening. And then in 2027, when Venice got so flooded that it couldn't recover, that's when the world woke up.
That was so sad. I miss Venice.
You can't even visit Venice anymore, right?
Well, I mean, sure you can, but there's only certain parts that you can go to.
It's too dangerous.
But why didn't they try to just to build it? Why can't they build up? Like abandon the bottom five
floors? Too cost
they build up.
The foundations weren't capable of having it.
Yep.
So
they would just sink back down.
It really hit a note across the globe when a lot of the art got destroyed. So that's when everybody.
Yeah.
I think we can kind of look back as a marker. Like the whole world took a pause. So then in 2027, that same year, we had the Quebec Accord happen, which was an absolute failure. Mm-hmm. I think Canada's heart was in the right place, but they tried to inspire the world to change, but the governments just can't get out of their own way.
But think about the Paris Accord, right? When was that? That was like 2015. They said, okay, we're going to limit post-industrial warming to 2.0 C above, you know, pre-industrial levels. And even though they knew that that was bad shit was going to happen at 2.0, really we needed to keep it beneath 1.5, which we hit this year, guys.
Yeah.
This year we had 1.5 C above pre-industrial level, yep. 2035.
Yep.
And they didn't even try to forget 1.5. They're like, let's just keep it below 2. And they failed to do that. What they agreed to wouldn't even accomplish that.
Yeah, there was no chance of them getting there.
Yeah, and then the Quebec Accord's like, all right, well, let's maybe 3.0. Let's just keep it 3 degrees C.
Move the goalposts.
You know, yeah. And then we're not gonna achieve that. We're
on track. Because they're not giving themselves any sort of, it's like a treaty. It's like, oh, we'll just agree to
pledge.
All do this. It's a pledge.
It's a
they're
pledge.
Not even
no
giving, there's no consequences for not sticking to it.
Well, that's the problem because it's the real first global problem.
People, countries can exit as they wish.
Yeah.
I mean, remember back when Trump just like dropped the ball and he just left. He just said, no Paris. I mean, we've been trying to make up for that ever since.
Maybe Rubio will do the same thing.
Yeah.
Ugh. President Rubio.
President
so,
Rubio.
So the things that we've seen, so it wasn't just the you know what happened in Venice, but you know the storms continued to become deadly, right? So we have people dying every time there's a storm, a big storm.
Seems like every hurricane's a Cat 5 now.
Yeah.
Oh, and my city is constantly on fire. L.A., also, I mean, Sydney, even Melbourne. It's on fire all the time now.
Yeah, they basically... It's always fire season.
Remember when?
Yeah, we used to have a fire season.
Remember fire season? Isn't that quaint?
Now it's a red flag day every day. Yeah.
But the reason why we're reviewing this is because, as you guys know, a few years ago in 2032, IKEA of all companies drew a line in the sand and said that corporations have to now take the responsibility. Mm-hmm. So, and I love the tagline. What's the tagline?
We got it.
We got this.
We got this. IKEA, they got this.
But I don't think it's we got this. I think it's we got this. You know, I think it's like, yeah, you guys failed. You're hopeless. You're in total political gridlock. So somebody's got to step in. So we got this. Go away. We'll
so you're referring to governments in general, right? I mean,
yeah, governments.
Right. Governments.
General.
Yeah. Right.
And that was a great tagline.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm worried about it.
It is a dystopian future, though, when corporations have to save us from government.
It's a dystopian present.
But literally, I remember back in 2018, I think it was, there was a very short-lived science fiction series on some cable channel, where that's exactly what happened, is that corporations had to step in because the governments were in gridlock, and then they used that in order to get... They didn't, like, take over from the governments. Governments just ceded them more and more power until they were de facto in charge, which is the way a lot of people are worried about, like, the conspiracy theories, but it's actually not unreasonable, you know, that's the ultimate plan of the, what are they calling it, the Global Corporate Initiative?
Right.
Yeah, their plan is not just to fix global warming for the world, but to actually take power, to seize power. But
so it didn't really... It almost started off as a joke, but then just recently, you know, in the news article that I'm covering, you know, we've actually hit a critical mass. Like, there's a lot of companies that just signed on that agreed that they're going to follow it. And now here are the basic rules or whatever that they're following. So they're saying that they will have a zero carbon emission or less, meaning that they could actually pay in to even reduce carbon emissions. So the company cannot produce any carbon whatsoever.
So they get credits if they go negative, carbon negative.
Well, actually, the companies are committing to the alliance or saying that if they do, that they have to pay massive fines to the
Well, can they just buy the credit for people who are negative?
Yeah,
so they have to be neutral.
They have to be neutral whether it's done through finances or through their actual...
So it's like the old cap-and-trade thing, but they're just doing it...
But what's the motivation for them to actually join this? Why are they joining? This is what's the win for them? I mean, this is going to cost them, but they may have to pay fines if they don't.
Haven't you seen all of those, like, social media boycotts of all the companies that are just eating carbon?
Yeah,
I think, like, you know, young people today, they don't want to buy products. They don't want to engage with companies that are just destroying the environment. They're a lot hipper than we were when we were young.
I don't go on the young people's social media, so I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
We're all on the same platform.
No, but Carrie, you're right, because the boycotting is actually part of the issue now, is that any companies... Well, there's people... It goes both ways. There's boycotting going both ways. So we have boycotts happening where companies that don't join are being boycotted, which is, you know...
Of course,
I'm kind of in that camp. But there are people that are saying if they do join, that these companies are trying to take power away from the government...
Great.
And people are boycotting them, saying that they're going to be a part of the future problem.
True.
So, you know, as typical,
kind of screwed either way, right?
It's a clusterfuck going both ways. But, I mean, you know, it's a little concerning because I would like to think that these companies have humanity's best in mind, right? You know,
why would you ever think that?
Well, I mean, it's always complicated, right? So companies sometimes do good things, right? Yeah. And they get PR out of it. And then you say, okay, are they doing it because they really care about their customers or they really care about the planet? And, you know, they're living on this planet too, you know? Yeah. And some of their profits actually are... There are lots of companies who are losing profits because of climate change.
Yeah.
So they're invested in it as well. But then you have to wonder, are they just doing it for the PR? Do they have an ulterior motive?
But also, does
you
that
never
matter?
Know the corporation. That's a good question. Well, does it really matter?
It just depends on what the result is.
If you do the right thing for the wrong reason and it helps, is that how much do you care about the motivation?
When it comes to climate change, I honestly don't mind.
I think they're also trying to prevent themselves from being handed down punishments by governments for not meeting certain criteria. So they're kind of trying to stay one step ahead of that because that's terrible for their PR.
Right? They're not going to get any punishment. Our government are in the pocket of lobbyists
But if they do get off their ass and actually do something, it's probably going to be short-sighted and draconian. And, you know, the companies are afraid of what might happen if some other populist takes control. And, you know, who knows? You know, the politics now are so – we thought they were bad and, you know, 2016 to 2020, they're even worse.
And the trillionaires are doing nothing. I mean, you know, we have...
Well, some of them are signing on to this accord.
Yeah, but so what? They're signing on, but, like, you know, they're the trillionaires. They have the money. Like, they could be throwing down half their wealth to try to save the planet, but that hasn't happened
yet. Wouldn't be enough.
No. I mean... The
imagine $500 billion, half your wealth.
It must be.
Sorry.
Of course, there was an unspoken sentence in there, Bob, something about Halloween, right?
No, it's just that I don't have $500 billion. And I want it.
2035 and SGU, we're not making it. We're just, we still got a long ways
still
to go before
that.
Before we break
out.
Even a million. Definitely not a billion.
So we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I feel like, what do we have to lose? You know, like no other government. Well, I mean... Denver and Colorado and California, you know, these are local governments, but they're kind of signing on now too, and they're starting to pressure the companies that are.
Yeah, but they've been doing that for years. And here's the thing: if you look at like recently, I saw over the last 30 years, right? As I was looking for in preparation for this, last 30 years, what has been the energy mix of the world's energy infrastructure?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
right. You've seen this chart. Yeah. I sent this out. So if you look at all the fossil fuels. They were increasing up until around 2025, and then they leveled off. They haven't. I mean, coal has decreased a little bit, but it's overtaken by natural gas. Mm-hmm. But overall, fossil fuel has been about level. It's not decreasing even now.
Yeah,
but what's happening?
Because there's so many more people now.
Right, it's 8.8 billion people.
Its proportion has been decreasing.
Well, yeah, but that's so there's been an expansion of renewable,
right.
A little bit of nuclear. I mean, like, now that the Gen 4 plants are coming online, you know,
about time.
But you know, they only have a few years before the older plants, like, really seriously need to be decommissioned. Yeah. That's going to be a looming disaster.
Yeah,
by
but
the way,
when the fusion plants come online, we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, right.
It's
20 years away.
It's not 20 years away. It's 15 years away.
So renewables increasing, nuclear's kind of stable, maybe increasing a little bit, but. That's just taking up all the new expansion of total global energy production.
Which is something.
But fossil fuels are flat.
Right.
We're not decreasing fossil
fuels. We're maintaining the same
over
carbon
the last,
output.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this for how long? We haven't been able.
Yeah.
How long has it been? You guys are like old now.
30 years.
Hey, okay, spring chicken.
Hey, well,
yeah,
when's
your Social Security kicking in? Not too far away.
Yeah, right?
We got like a whole decade ahead of me.
Do you still have Social Security? I don't
know. No, it's completely insolvent, but.
All right, so now we have to wait for IKEA to save us. Is that what you're telling me?
The global corporate alliance.
Yeah,
that's true.
That doesn't sound evil.
We got this.
That does sound evil, doesn't
it? It is.
Yeah.
How could that not be evil?
I know.
Well, all right. Let's see what happens.
What else do they got?
All right, and guys, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
This is especially Bob.
What?
How many domains of life are there?
Wait, there was like, oh crap, is. Bacteria, archaea, prokaryotes.
No, those are the prokaryotes.
Now, wait. No.
Yes.
No, eukaryotes.
And eukaryotes.
So, all right. Archaea, bacteria, eukarya, and...
So traditionally, that's it.
Okay.
Right? Those three.
All right.
But there's a fourth.
Something.
There's a new fourth domain of life.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
That is crazy.
And the name will pretty much give it away.
Of course.
The name is Synthetica.
Yes.
Right. So now there's a fourth domain of life.
But is that recognized now?
Hang on. We'll get there. So let's back up a little bit. So again, we're going to give the arc, right?
All right. So
we're talking about genetic engineering, mm-hmm. right? This kind of came on our radar around 2010, maybe 2012, that kind of area, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. When we started talking about GMOs, right, genetically modified organisms, mm-hmm. and there was a big anti-GMO movement, right, which lasted yep. deep into the 2020s.
Oh, my God. We talked about that, like, every week on the show back then.
Well, that's because, right, it's not
yeah.
our fault. It's
It became a huge thing. It was like there was a major science denial thing. Yeah. Even among skeptics initially, but I think we sort of turned the boat around for skeptics at first, and then, but politically it was really hard sell for a while. However, but let me give you a history of what's happened and why there's yeah. really not much of an anti-GMO movement anymore.
That was a good win, man.
That felt
well, good.
It was a good win for the wrong reason, though. I'll explain why. So first, papaya ring spot virus, right, started around 2000. By 2006, this actually goes back decades before that, had slashed papaya production by 50%. By that time, also, there was basically no farm in Hawaii, no papaya farm that didn't have the ring spot virus. So it was basically obliterating the papaya industry. In 1998, a GMO papaya was introduced, which had the viral inclusion in it, right? Mm-hmm. The viral DNA mm-hmm. in it. And that was was how it conferred resistance to the virus. So basically, there would be no papaya industry. Going back, this is like going back to 2015. There would be no papaya industry without GMO papaya,
right. yeah.
which is ironic because Hawaii was one of the most anti-GMO states, but mm-hmm. they quietly sort of adopted GMO papayas because they would be effed with that.
But that didn't really change sentiment back then.
It
felt
didn't because
like.
It was under the radar.
And that's because all the staple crops they were mostly GM.
All the anti-GMO people just ignored the papaya story.
Although they ate it.
They ate the papaya.
Of course they did.
All right. The American chestnut tree, there was a fungus which was...
That was back in when? Like the 60s or something?
That wiped out the American chestnut in the 1950s.
In the 50s?
And so we grew up with chestnuts, but like the trees were just basically dying away. This is like eastern United States, very, very common tree. It was like almost like the most common tree in our part of the world. Up until we were children, that was gone. Just totally
I don't think
gone.
I've ever eaten a chestnut.
Yeah.
Is that
what?
A thing
However,
people eat?
That's you know that song?
It's a song.
Yeah.
I've never had a chestnut.
Come on, I eat about three of those
never
a
had
year.
A chestnut.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
But in 2019, they approved a GMO American chestnut tree that was resistant to the fungus that wiped it out. It was years before they planted it, but now there's a thriving American chestnut industry.
Mm, East Coasters are weird.
All right. Yeah. So those were good wins, but they were below the radar for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's the one that there's two. There's two that really drove it home. The first one, in 2024, the Cavendish banana industry completely collapsed.
Boom.
Due to Panama disease.
Now, Cavendish banana, that's the banana we all think of when you think of a banana.
Right.
That's Cavendish.
At the time.
The common banana.
At the time, yes. That was the banana.
That was it.
That was it, and that was it. One.
Yeah, so there was the Gros Michel, which died out in the early 20th century, and then there was the Cavendish, which died out.
That's
the
one you guys always used to talk about. You love those weird Gros Michel.
They're back, though. But, all right. So
I remember you cried when we found out that they were gone.
Yeah. What the hell? We knew it was coming for years, too. Like, we were talking about it on the show. The banana's going to be going.
It still surprised you.
It still surprised me. But, okay, Fusarium wilt, or Tropical Race 4, or Panama disease, completely wiped out the Cavendish industry. I think the last holdout was South America, but it was detected in South America in 2019, and that's when they knew it's a matter of time.
Yep.
That once they had one banana, that's it.
Yeah.
So,
remember that? I mean, no ice cream sundaes for a little while.
We went years without I went years without a banana.
That was bad, man.
Now, but even before that, before 2024, when the Cavendish was gone, back in like 2017. There were Australian researchers had developed a Panama disease resistant banana.
Oh, it came out of Australia. It
came out of Australia, 2017.
That. Cool. And that was done. Well done, audience.
Yeah. That was the beginning of the banana hubbub.
Well, it was the beginning of the banana hubbub.
Also known as banana rama.
However, nobody really knew about it until the banana apocalypse. The banana apocalypse wiped out the Cavendish, and then these Australian researchers were like, hey, we got the GMO.
We got
the resistant banana.
We're ready to go.
But the thing is, even that might
we got
not have,
this.
We got this, right? Even that might not have been enough because The Cavendish, I love it. It's a dessert banana. It's a it was the number one export fruit, you know, before
fed countries.
Well, no, not that banana. Other bananas.
What are other bananas?
There are staple bananas that are basically like, you know, what we would call the plantain.
Oh, that's right.
They're starchy bananas, and you cook with them, right?
They're awesome.
Yeah, Steve, why are you so into bananas?
I don't know.
You're really into bananas.
I just always loved them. Yeah. My favorite fruit.
It's fair. Okay.
So
she tried to grow them for years and failed.
That's right. Remember back in the teens? Did I ever tell you that I hated those goddamn banana plants? They were in our studio. Well, I know. They were getting like, and his cats were pissing.
The cats.
In the banana
that's
plant.
What it was.
That's
I remember
when I first
that.
Joined the SG way back then. Yeah. They were in the basement.
Steve and I almost got into a fist fight once in our entire life, and it was over cats pissing in the studio and the banana plants.
Those cats
were behind the scenes.
Maybe I should try again. But anyway, something like 20% of the world like are dependent on bananas for their staple calories.
That's a lot.
When those started succumbing to versions of Panama disease, then we were starting to have like Africa and Southeast Asia where like there was like starvation looming. That's when the world's like, okay, this is not just our ice cream sundaes anymore. Like we can't feed these people unless we get these banana cultivars back online.
Yeah, this GM technology is looking pretty good right
now. GM technology saved the banana industry, and basically, you know, lots of starving Africans. And then here's the double whammy. 2026, the citrus industry was completely wiped out by citrus greening.
That
right?
was awful.
That.
And again, we talked about that for at least 15 years before it hit. Remember Kevin Falter, that guy?
Yeah,
he would always tell us,
man,
when citrus greening wipes out the citrus fruit,
then you're going to see citrus.
He was right.
He was absolutely right. That objection to... So, of course, in 2031, the first GMO orange with resistance genes from spinach were planted. They were working on that for years and years. And it essentially resurrected the citrus industry, not only in Florida, but also in Australia and in other parts of the world where
they
grow
citrus. Now they could grow them pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
Remember
smart.
They were selling screwdrivers half price at the bars?
So here we are. There's 8.8 billion people on the planet.
God, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
Oof.
So essentially, everyone knows, you know, except for a shrinking fringe, that there is no agriculture without GMOs. Bottom line, we would not be able to feed the planet without GMOs. There are still the extremists who are like, let them starve, and then everything will be fine, right?
Those people are terrible.
Yeah, but
they're so marginalized now.
They're totally, even Greenpeace, remember that, what was that, 2030 or something, when Greenpeace was like, okay, I guess we have to, like, feed people, you know? We can't let people starve.
Yeah, it only took them decades.
Yeah.
So you don't really hear anything from the anti-GMO crowd anymore, right?
It's been not really. Yeah, they're pretty fringy.
All right, there's one more thing that happened, too, I have to say. All right, so this is good. So GR5, this is the fifth generation golden rice, is now online. But even back to GR2, which was the first one planted in Bangladesh in 2019, if you guys remember that. So before golden rice, there were 500,000 children throughout the world would go blind from vitamin A deficiency every year, and half of those would die within a year,
right?
Not only that, but vitamin A deficiency, even if it doesn't make you go blind or kill you, it leaves you with low resistance,
vulnerable to other
infections. So remember all the measles outbreaks in 2019, 2020, 2021?
Yeah, but that was because of anti-vax.
It was, when there wasn't anti-vax, the children were in Africa and especially were susceptible to measles because they had relative vitamin A deficiency.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah. So guess how many children went blind in 2035 so far? So almost at the end of the year due to vitamin A deficiency.
Less than 500,000.
It was a high.
3,000.
Wow.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like anything. When you easily fix the problem, it goes away. So it's hard to argue with success.
So let's not.
So right. Now.
But now. Yeah. But wait. But of course you know.
It's better.
That's the good news. The good news is over now. Now we're getting into. So have you guys heard the term Gen Craft? This is kind of a new term. I think we might have mentioned it right before. It's all under genetic engineering, but it's not genetic modification. It's basically crafting life from scratch.
This is the synthetic stuff.
This is the synthetic stuff, right. So we've been talking about this since, I think, 2017, 2016.
Venter.
Mm-hmm.
Venter. Greg Venter. Yeah.
So this, they first did, you know, bacteria, and then they did colonies, multicellular. And then actually not multicellular sort of pseudo colonies, but now the first actual multicellular, completely synthetic creatures. Again, we've talked about that are being created, but the first one was approved for human consumption by the FDA.
Well, they got it passed.
Got it passed.
And it's disgusting.
Hang on.
Don't look at it pre-processed.
Put a lot of tomato sauce.
Hang on. So it's Sibumlimax, that's a terrible name, Ventura. It basically means meat slug. Right? And then Ventura is after
Ventura. You're right.
They're going to come up with some like yummy brand
names. Yeah, something else.
Well, that's the technical, that's the taxonomical name. So it's the domain synthetica, and then they have blah, 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 Sibumlimax and Ventura.
Yeah, we don't go to like the barbecue place and ask for some like, I don't know, what's
the
Latin name for a cow?
Oh, remember
whatever it is.
Veggie burgers and the Impossible Burger, right? Then the insect burgers, right? Yeah. The bug burgers.
We call it the blobby burger. I like that.
No,
the
slug
blobby
burger.
Burger.
Slug burger. Slug burger. Slug,
no, that blobby is not burger. Appetizing.
Look, you know what, though? You remember how I was so freaked out you were trying to make me eat
Impossible
cricket
burgers.
Wheat, cricket wheat or something.
Oh, yeah, cricket flour.
Cricket flour.
Yeah. That's like, a staple now,
yeah.
Jay. I mean,
Grandma. Come on. Yeah, but I'm proud to say I've never eaten it.
Still?
You probably have. I guarantee you
haven't been to
restaurants. Restaurants are using it. UV.
Wait, they have to say they put bugs.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
They don't.
That's the thing. If you have eaten processed food from the supermarket, that is a wheat-like product.
That's bullshit.
Jay, it's in everything now.
Have you read your ingredients?
It's in everything.
Jay, I'm going to admit right now, Jay was having a hamburger, and I made an insect burger, and he didn't know it, and I put it on his dish. He ate it and said nothing. I didn't say a word till just...
When did this happen?
6 months ago.
All right. So
you loved it, dude.
Insect burgers are old news. Now we have slug burgers.
Blobby burgers.
They're basically slug burgers.
No, we'll come up with something.
They're going to call it something else.
Craft burgers? Ooh, since they come from Gen Craft.
You know what the thing
Gen Craft. That sounds
more delicious. The slugs look like pink. Remember pink slime? McDonald's,
sure.
Chicken
well,
yeah.
McNuggets. I've seen the videos. I mean, yeah, they look like pink slime.
I know, but that's why you don't look at them. Like, we don't cook them.
It's just a blob of meat like protein. Like, it's just the amino acids and whatever. And then they grind it up, and it looks meat.
Yeah, and it's got no central nervous system, right? So there's no...
Yeah, so it has nerves, because it can move, and it can feed, and it has some kind of, you know, like neuronal kind of ganglia.
It's like ganglia.
The vegans aren't into this,
but it's an invertebrate, like an invertebrate.
Right.
It's like an insect, or a plant.
Right.
See, so the vegans won't eat this, huh?
Why not? What, I don't know. Probably not.
I think that, you know, some of them still don't eat insects.
Yeah, if they don't eat insects, they won't eat this.
Yeah, it's like a hard line thing.
But it has no face. Remember the nothing with a face thing?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I don't eat anything with a face.
No, that's nothing with a face. It has no face.
Did you see the scientist who drew the face on one?
Yes!
Yes!
So, you know, it may still be a year or two before we could actually get these, you know, at the Hungry Jack's or whatever. it's just protein, right? It's just like the insect wheat. Now we got slug burgers or whatever, slug protein.
Ugh.
And you could mass produce these things. So these eat slime or something. Like you see them crawling around eating algae, but they're working on ones that can photosynthesize.
Oh, that's smart.
Oh, that's
just kind of direct,
So guess how many genes are in this synthetic slug?
Like what, 300 or something?
How many genes? So we've got far fewer genes than we anticipated. When we
300.
First started, was it 20,000?
Yeah, 20,000.
So how about like 8,000?
400.
400.
That's 400. All. But how much does a slug have?
I don't know.
428.
So what's
an actual slug?
Oh, that's right. It's really efficient, huh?
Yeah, so it's a little bit more efficient than an actual slug. But the genes have like no exons.
No, yeah, it's nowhere. Yeah, all just like they work. There's no
or no introns.
No junk.
So
they're all exons.
Is
no
that why
DNA.
They decided to just kind of do this as a Gen Craft, like a synthetic biology, so instead of just genetically modifying the slug?
Because you're not going to get like animal protein in an insect.
That's true. If you eat a slug, you're not going to get a high level.
You're
you get a little
vertebrate
bit of protein.
Protein. You're not going to get muscle protein. But this is like making muscle-like protein.
Oh, it's so gross and weird. I love it.
But why didn't they just do it like back when they started to come up with lab meat?
Yeah, but the lab-grown meat thing never really panned out.
Yeah, why did
it's too energy intensive. So you can get it. I mean, you know, I've had the lab-grown meat thing. And they're fine, but they're still a little bit expensive.
But guys, we're in a water crisis. We can't use that much water.
It's very water intensive.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Steve, did they when they were developing the blobby to slug? Did they figure out like some of the junk DNA? Like, oh, this junk DNA is important because it does something that we didn't think it did.
There's no junk DNA in it. right? Because it's totally so. Yeah, so Ventnor gave an interview about it. There's they've written articles about it. So every single gene was completely synthesized. Over the last 20 years, they've learned what the minimum number of genes that are absolutely necessary for something to live.
Sure.
To develop,
bacteria and stuff, but microorganisms.
It turned out it wasn't that hard. If you're building a really simple multicellular creature, most of the genes are for just the cells to live. And then just getting them to differentiate a little bit differently so they break up the work, They're not all doing the same thing. It's not that hard. It actually turned out to be not that hard.
And remember, this thing doesn't have to live in the wild. It doesn't have to, do a lot of
all
the
it
work.
All it has to do is eat.
It just has to eat and produce meat for us. Or protein for us.
I know people like that.
What if we put it in the wild? Could it evolve?
No. It can't survive in the wild.
It would die, I think.
It has no defense.
It has no evolutionary fitness.
Oh, the other animals would be look at that slab of protein. can't get away, can't do anything. Let's go eat it.
Is there a waste product or a byproduct of it?
It does poop, apparently. Right. But I think they just recycle that.
Why can't they just make something that poops meat?
Jay.
We'll get right on that.
The most scientifically astute question.
They could call it a
question.
Shit burger.
A shit burger.
That'll sell.
I'm not eating that shit.
Yeah, this is the guy who won't eat a bug burger.
Right, yeah.
Meat poop.
He must eat a shit burger.
I would try a shit burger.
Comes out as sausage links. Already cased, ready to go.
Quote of the day from Jay. He'd try a shit burger but won't eat cricket powder.
I just have a thing about bugs, man.
But not slugs,
feces.
Okay? So, of course, there's already an anti-GenCraft movement.
This is the bad news.
This is the bad news.
It
ain't natural. It's all the same arguments recycled over the last 30 years of doing the show. It's the same thing, right?
It's not natural.
It hasn't been tested enough.
It's cruel.
Well, they're trying to say that.
I've seen people that.
I know, but that's a hard. This thing is engineered.
We're
not
playing
to
God.
Its own existence.
Playing God. Yeah, I've seen that one.
We're
a
playing
lot.
God. Yeah. Complex.
Right. They're saying they can't detect the fact that they are having some sort of existence, some qualia.
Prove
that
they don't know they're being killed. Whatever. It's a slug. Not even cute.
But it's
they
not,
designed it
have...
to not be cute.
But sometimes things that are really ugly are a little bit cute.
Oh, stop it.
It's true.
You shouldn't talk about your boyfriend.
He's never
like
seen
that.
You've been going into the OG too much and putting faces on these things. Okay, so you got to cut down your time.
All right.
We'll see. They're already writing. They're already writing virtual mails to their congresspersons and everything. Oregon already banned it. In Oregon.
Of course they did.
Yeah. Well,
I'd be shocked if they didn't.
So we'll see. This is another round. Now we have to go hold. We'll see what they're still sort of creating their message, but this is I think going to be our thing for the next few years is dealing with the anti-GenCraft crowd.
Yeah. And don't forget. This is a new domain of life. This is the first. This is the first application of that creation.
They've done more in the lab. This is the first one that we're able to consume.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's pretty cool.
And that's great, but who knows what they're going to come up with GenCraft.
All right, but here's the thing.
Something that's going to make a blobby burger look like whatever.
The thing is, they're not releasing this into the wild. This is a lab creature, right? I think the big fight's going to come the first time they want to release something into the wild.
Well, yeah.
Or grow a crop in the field.
There's going to be some renegade scientist who tries to do this.
Probably in China.
Way back when they do. Right, yeah. Right. The old CRISPR.
The CRISPR babies
from
way back when.
Aww.
Yep. Yeah, they're still kicking, I understand.
Yeah.
They can make some that, eat all the plastic in the oceans. We know how big of a problem that is.
Yeah, so they're already doing that with the bacteria, right? Yeah. They made the ones that can eat oil spills, that can eat plastic.
They're just working slowly.
That can eat carbon. They're all there. They're just a lot in various stages of the regulatory procedure. Some are being used, but they still haven't pulled the trigger on releasing a synthetica into the wild.
And that's as it should be, because it's super dangerous.
It is.
It depends on the form.
We got to hear from the experts. You know, they're the regulatory boards are being formed, the ethics boards, and they're figuring it out.
But here's one thing is they cannot, by design, cross-pollinate or interbreed with normal life, with the other three domains of life.
These organisms are just pure prey animals at this point. They're not...
Yeah, but Steve, what
life
they,
finds a way.
I mean, they've
life
done a lot
finds
of,
a way.
They've done. I remember way back in 2019, I talked about how they took bacteria and they were turning them into multicellular animals because they were able to.
Yeah, this is an extension of that.
So imagine taking archaea or bacteria with their exotic metabolisms, creating multicellular life out of them.
I mean, so then what would that fall under, Synthetica, or would that be some
It depends.
Sort of,
so by definition...
If we become eukaryotic.
Yeah, how are they defining these
things? By definition, if you are a member of the domain Synthetica, all of your genes have been created entirely artificially.
100%.
Okay. 100%. So, even if you perfectly replicate...
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's a loophole. You can replicate a gene that exists in other creatures, but you have to have completely manufactured that.
Right. And it's got to be like trademarked, right? You can read it in the DNA.
We're now going to have to train...
But at the very least, they take out all the junk and all that stuff.
And I'm serious. We have to train like Blade Runners to kill these things.
Slug runners.
Because they get out, you know, think about it. They get out and then, they don't want to be eaten. And next thing you know, they're like punching holes through walls and they're pissed
off. With their little slug hands.
Tears in the rain.
They go back to the scientist who made them.
They're pseudopods.
You don't want to be a burger.
Yeah.
You're a slug. All right.
Hey.
Slug runners, yeah.
All right. What do we got next?
What do we got next? We have...
Am I next?
Yes. Kara is next. With what's the latest, Kara, with social media?
Oh God, there's so much to talk about, you guys.
This is overwhelming.
The main article that I wanted to cover today was kind of the big, and I know you all saw this. This was like the headline everywhere. It was just happened 2 days ago, and we're still dealing with the fallout. We're going to be dealing with fallout for a while. So you guys know Control Alt Delete, this like kind of hacker movement, like
CAD.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people call them, CAD, CAD.
And this all the cool people call them CAD.
Right. I still like Control.
I guess I'm not cool. And Control Alt Delete is this kind of like underground. We still don't know who they are, right? Like, I mean, there have been a couple of examples in the news where somebody came out and was like, "I'm Control Alt Delete," but nobody actually believes them.
Yeah. If you admit to being CAD,
then you're not CAD.
Is that the Spartacus moment? Yeah. I am Spartacus.
No, it's not. It's loser wannabes.
Yeah.
The real people, you will never find out who they are.
So Control Alt Delete has been targeting kind of a lot of these new platforms. And I mean, the biggest one, the one that's been the hardest to kind of get into, is the one that most of us are on, the Aug, right?
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I've had my Aug on all night, actually. I think it's kind of fun, especially when you're sick and a little bit loopy. So I mean, I don't know if all of you are in it right now. We don't really have to.
No, I turned mine off.
Intermittently.
I was told I could not bring my Aug. And I'm feeling.
Well,
I'm
Bob,
getting
that's
separation
because you just get
anxiety.
Lost.
That's because when you're using Aug, Bob, you still
go
have a
off
few.
Into
yeah, you
worlds.
Are like staring off into space. You look creepy.
And then we're like, Bob, hello, it's your
creepier.
Turn.
But there's a lot of cool stuff I'm doing. You
I know.
That's good.
Concentrate, man.
You have to use Aug to improve
checking your
work.
Vmail and stuff while we're doing the show. I mean,
do that shit at home. Don't Aug on my time.
Yeah, but looking at Jay without my filter on is hard.
That's mean.
Sorry, Jay.
Thanks, Bob.
Look, he's not shaved.
I know.
So you're seeing a shaved version of me?
And the filter I put on his hair makes his hair look so cool.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with my hair?
It's cool. It's nice, Dave, but the filter I have on your hair is awesome.
That blue streak?
Oh, yeah, and it moves cool. And stuff.
I've got to admit, it has been easier. Like, I don't really like to wear makeup, and so I like thinking that a lot of people are looking at me in Aug land. Like, I'm a little improved. You know, it's 2.0. But, yeah, so you know that the Aug has been kind of the one that's taken off the most. There's some offshoots and stuff, but I'm not using them. Are you guys on them?
No.
Aug has everything we need, right? It has like all of our social stats. It has our social currency. I mean, it's tied into my bank accounts, all of them.
Yep.
I think
pretty much. Yeah,
yeah, pretty
me
much.
As well.
I mean, and we've been kind of on the fence about how it's, you know, plugging more and more things into it.
In 2032, I think it was, insurance companies will now pay for Aug doctor visits.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean,
I missed that.
Doesn't get more mainstream than that.
I know, exactly. I mean, it's kind of hard not to be in the Aug at this point because, like, well, actually, it's impossible. I don't think I know anybody who's not using Aug.
Everybody's
Aug,
doing
do
it.
Yeah.
You can't function in society.
You can't function. How could you
it
function?
Like,
what did we do before Aug? We used, like...
We had to, like, use our
It was a wallet
phones.
Or something.
Oh, my God. Remember
cards?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, plastic cards. That's
so funny.
Oh, my gosh.
I kept my old ones. They're in my... They're in a...
I mean, you guys take it like it's okay, and I'm not cool with it.
Are you still using paper money?
No, I'm just... Of course not, but my point is, like... This is like this is a totalitarian. I can't even say the
totalitarian
dream. This is a wet dream. I'm
Jay, it is in China. It is in Russia. But the government doesn't have their hands on Aug. I know.
How the hell do you know that?
Well, I mean, they don't own the companies.
They don't admit.
These are private, enterprises. No,
that's again the conspiracy theory.
Right.
So we all know that Russia and China are complete Aug totalitarian governments.
Yeah.
Right. If you live in China. You're on their version of the Aug. They completely...
I think it's still called WeChat.
Is it still WeChat?
Yeah, they never changed the name.
Out in the West, in other parts of the world, the governments
and
don't control
moon,
it. But corporations do, and yeah. Some people argue that they're actually more powerful than the government.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. we're still having this conversation, privacy versus yeah. convenience, yeah. right?
And people I think at this point, always trade privacy for a little bit.
I mean, back in 2020, back in 2020, Amazon was rated the first company and the number one company to truly have such an amazing amount of data on its customers. Yeah. That it's like a transcendent moment for a company to get to that level of data. And the, you know, we were questioning back then. I mean, I was following this very closely back then. You know, there's no regulations for that level of data. No government in the world created regulation to deal with that.
Remember when Zuckerberg gave all those testimonies before Congress? Yeah. No one believed a word he said.
But Jay, don't act like you didn't just buy something from those targeted ads the other
I day. I literally just did as we were talking.
Yeah, you did.
No, but the point is, though, like, we can't.
I love targeted ads.
Because
me too. They're so good.
Because
now.
Really know what
they're
I want.
Crazy good.
I
we're so hardwired into this thing. Like, you know, we have to.
It's scary how
the interdependency is.
We can't go back. You can never go back. When cell phones came, there was no going to a life
it's,
that didn't
it's
exist.
Part of our life. Yeah, I mean, it would be really hard.
But this thing owns us.
But here's the thing. Here's the scary thing, and it's something that I think we didn't think would be possible because of the way that data is distributed, kind of in the cloud. And Bob, I know you know about this, like server farms and like data centers. You understand this a lot better than I do, but. Apparently, this is the new headline.
Yeah.
100 So control alt delete managed finally. And you know they've gone in and they've shut down server farms before. We keep seeing these like headlines where, you know, something gets blacked out for a couple weeks and it takes a while to put it back online. They finally somehow managed to trace the data of a packet of people. So 100,000 people.
Oh my gosh.
Their entire OGG history has been erased.
Ooh.
Yeah,
they finally did it.
That.
They finally did it.
Backup and everything gone?
They're ghosts.
They're
all
calling
the backups,
them
all the
orphans, right?
Or all of, yeah,
virtual orphans.
All their money.
Oh.
All of their proof of their education.
And there you go.
All of their social currency. I mean, everything. Their history, all their memories, basically.
Right?
I mean, we live via our photographs and our video recordings now.
I mean, how do they...
High scores on Plants vs. Zombies are gone.
Farmville. Who knew that would stick around?
I really never thought they would be able to do it. I mean, think of all the backups. You know, it's not one data center. You got backups. You got backups in the cloud, backups on the moon. How do they get access to all of that?
Right?
That's scary as hell.
You would think, but this is maybe part of the problem, is that when a corporation, a multinational corporation, owns these things, so they should be spread all over the world, it's still only like one company, ultimately, right? I mean, it's a conglomerate, but...
Inside job, maybe? Pirates Within?
I mean, they've got to have moles
right?
in there.
But
yeah, they have to have access to enough information
but,
to know.
Okay, so they're... Okay, I don't... It was terrible what CAD did to these people. It's terrible. But the point... The reason why they did it was to show that the companies literally... If like, look, these people don't have lives anymore. What are these people going to do? They literally don't exist in our system.
So congratulations. They proved you could destroy somebody's life by destroying their OGG, by making them virtual.
They're the ones who did it.
But they're the ones who did it.
The companies, so far, these people on the OGG had been fine.
I don't know. I don't agree. I know that what they did was wrong, but I think that the point that they tried to make, they made. And it's scary.
I think this is showing the dark side of hacktivism. As much as I agree with a lot of like the posts that I've read from Control Alt Delete, I think they went too far this time.
They have a point, but they're basically terrorists. I hate to use that word, but if you're doing that, so there's a talk. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is part of your news item, though, but talk of the UN. Are you going to get to that part? But mm-hmm. The UN basically they're considering a resolution to make what just so that they have more regulatory power to go after. You know, CAD, Control Alt Delete.
Yeah.
If you kill somebody's virtual history, that's now virtual murder.
Oh, like they're because we all have our little avatars.
Yeah.
Like you
can
actually murder somebody.
Well,
in the OGG.
But if you 100% erase somebody's data so they can't come back, that is virtual murder.
So these guys could be like tried in the Hague.
They can get tried in the Hague.
That's crazy.
If they ever catch them, they can get...
Well, that's catching them is going to be so hard.
If they catch those...
Oh, they're done. They're toast, yeah. But I'm sure it's like cells, and you might get one guy or one sub. You'll never totally root out... You know.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. The other scary reality is, so CAD, sure, they did something bad. But,
really bad.
You know, but there's... Okay, I don't want to say real terrorists out there, but there are terrorist groups... that do want to tear down the society that we live in.
Well, how better to tear down society than to get rid of someone's complete OGG history? Jay, imagine yourself as one of these people. What do you do?
You're done.
You're done. You're cooked.
I know, but the point...
Go live on a commune
in the woods. I think the point
is
that we're missing... Like,
some people already do that. There are people who aren't in the off... I mean, I don't know any of them, but I read about them.
The off-gridders.
Yeah, the off-gridders. Yeah, they're weird. There's a TV show about them on Discovery.
Do you guys...
The off-gridders?
Yeah.
Do you guys think that... You know, it actually, the show's pretty cool. But do you guys think, though, that we are kind of going down the snake's mouth right now with technology?
Yeah, but we've been saying this for 20 years.
That's the thing. I mean, it's like, it's so hard, right? Because we were going to go this route anyway. That's the thing. If you know, the Augs parent company didn't hit the right kind of algorithm to get us here, another company would have.
I'm not saying, yeah, of course. I think it would have happened either way. But look, back in like the mid 2015 era, we started to realize that Facebook really didn't have humanity's best interest in mind. And then we watched Zucker freak go in front of Congress and lie his face off, telling them how everything that...
Do you remember when he ran for president?
Yeah, I know.
An idiot. Sorry.
Well, that was the beginning of his downfall. But, the point is, though, we saw it even with Facebook, and this is nothing... Facebook is nothing compared to this. This is literally... We live in an augmented reality now.
I know, but Facebook didn't give us anything except people's pictures of their babies.
But at the time...
Like, this is way better.
And a lot of advertising.
Cat videos.
A lot of advertising.
Well, I don't know.
But now
I don't
you
know.
Can just watch a cat video anytime, anywhere.
I always got one running in the corner of my vision. It's really cool.
But we were on Facebook, and it was important to our marketing, and it was, you know...
Well, that's the point.
I know.
Isn't it?
And
I mean, that's the part that's so...
Imagine our show without the Augs.
I know, yeah. But that's the part that's so unsavory to me and that I do have the yucky feeling about. It's like it all is just about marketing still.
Yeah, it is.
It's all just about selling a shit.
That's been true for so long.
Ever since
the analog days.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And beyond.
And, they're so good at now. It's like a lot of people are saying that there's psychic... It's actually giving credence to people's belief in psychics.
They think they're psychic?
They must be psychic because they know what I want so
before
fast.
Don't they understand big data? That's ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah.
But we see it. We see it.
It's funny as hell.
All right. I'm warning you guys. I'm warning. I bet you in another 10 years we'll see some seriously bad stuff come out of this.
Another 10 years you'll be dead.
Well, what?
There you go, Jay.
That's
how's that? Yeah, there you go.
Those longevity therapies are working pretty damn good.
Ever the techno optimist.
Can we download ourselves?
Look at me.
That's kind of what the audience is.
You'll never be
5 to 10 years. 5 to 10 years.
Evan.
Yeah.
All right. Now this is some.
This is the big news. This is actually everything else is like just the warm up to like the actual big news that everybody wants to hear
100,000
about.
100,000 people are.
Because what do we got? 10 years to live? What's going on?
It's 20.
Wait, 20. Oh, 20.
It's 20. 20 years. 20 years to live.
What's that about now?
But we'll be dead.
But we're working. We're working on it. We're working on it. Okay. So I have to. I want to remind everyone of the whole background of this. So please bear with me before I get to the actual news item.
Like we don't know, but go ahead.
I know. So I'm hoping the audience here remembers Apophis, right? The 2029 asteroid that came within 25,000 kilometers of Earth. Mm-hmm.
It's just nothing. It's a whisker.
But it missed us?
It did miss us, absolutely. And that's what the scientists
told us. Yeah, that's why
we're
still here, because it missed us.
Yeah.
And it happened on a Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Which,
throwing
that
out. What are the odds?
Yeah.
remember the party we threw that
day? Pretty decent. There was so much fear-mongering with Apophis. You know, it was first discovered way back in 2004. And at that point, the scientists, with the information they had, there was maybe just under a 3% chance of it actually impacting the planet, based on the data they had at the time. Well, that sent people kind of into, okay, here it is. Now, finally, this is the real apocalypse coming. You know, forget all the other, the Mayan, the 2012, and all that.
Forget all the other apocalypses.
This is the actual one, right? But as time went on and more careful studying of it went, they realized that that shrunk down over the years. And by the time about 2019, 2020 rolled around, the scientists said, is 0% chance of this. And of course, it didn't. But, you know, Apophis was the god of chaos, for those who don't know their Greek mythology. And you'll remember that tragic incident leading up to the flyby, the cult, known as the Children of Claude. That was an offshoot of the Raelian movement. Do you guys remember? We used to talk about the Raelians way back, like in the 2005, 2006. Yes.
They stuck around all that time.
They did.
Was that guy with the hair that said, I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens. Was he a Raelian?
I think I know of whom you're speaking. That's the Claude person, and this offshoot is the Children of Claude.
Okay.
So they were the ones who, you know, as the asteroid came by, they thought it was going to open an interdimensional space, and the only way to get up there was to leave their earthly coils. So, a couple dozen people, unfortunately,
took their own lives. But we've seen this before, cults and
that
suicide.
Hale Bopp
back in 97. And the Heaven's
Gate. These guys are way too young to remember that. Cult.
Anyone?
No, they're too young.
Oh, gosh, I'm totally dating myself. I'm an old man. I'm an old man now. Well, in any case, that was the most, I think, notable fear-related story to it. The internet obviously went wild. But then in 2030, okay, just a couple years ago, you know what came next. The astronomers located Object Designation 2030 U.S., also known as PERSES.
PERSES,
P-E-R-S-E-S.
Named, not Perseus.
Not Perseus, no.
PERSES.
PERSES was the Greek titan of destruction, all right?
Appropriate.
And that one, this one's given us trouble. Yeah. 33% chance of impact. And the studies since then, they've obviously been very closely monitoring this one, and it's holding true.
Yeah.
How far away is it now?
Well, 2055 is going to be the date. June 21, 2055 is going
right around
to be.
The
so
20.
We've got, there's 20 years. But as you know, NASA, the ESA, the Russian Space Federation, and others have finally...
NASA, among
others, is Israel's group in the Space Agency of India. You know, if we can't, okay, so they can't get behind global warming and deal with that, but at least this is something that they can get behind and they have gotten.
We
behind.
Like a good short-term threat.
So we're, yeah, right? Exactly. When something's especially, a little more immediate and like right in your
right.
face.
Especially when it's an extinction-level event.
That will motivate.
And
they'll make
governments.
Lots of movies about it.
Oh, yeah. Documentaries.
Yeah.
They'll dig up Bruce Willis.
Poor guy.
They use his virtual.
That movie he made sucked, didn't it?
That one movie he made?
What about that? Remember, he was a coal
Remember that Christmas movie, Die Hard?
I was going to say, Die Hard is a Christmas
movie. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
It's still my favorite Christmas
also
movie.
Also too young.
Wow. Really? Here's the news item today.
Okay.
ESA.
Is it good news?
It is good news because
I'd rather not be hit by a 2-kilometer. Right?
Exactly. And the prevention methods have gone into effect because the ESA successfully launched GT-1 into orbit the other day. No issues. Everything is fine. It's the first salvo in the fight against Perseus in which the craft is going to approach Perseus and establish a fixed position in close proximity to it. It's using the gravity tractor method.
Oh, GT-1.
GT-1, yeah. which is why it's called.
I love this idea.
So if all goes according to plan, here's Perseus. It's coming in. GT-1, they're going to park it over here in a stable position, and it should, the gravity between the two objects, it should nudge it. It should nudge it just a bit. And it doesn't need to nudge much because it's still out there far enough, a few centimeters. That's all they're looking to do at this,
but
this distance.
20 years is actually right on the margin
on the edge.
For the gravity tug.
Yeah, but they want to try as soon as, I mean, or as late, whatever you want to say.
That can't be the only thing that they're doing.
No,
they tried other stuff.
There's a three-pronged attack against Perseus, and this was the first one, and it successfully went in. But there are two more coming. So the second prong is being undertaken by China's space agency. They're going to be launching a direct impact probe into Perseus, and they're going to attempt to knock it.
Yeah.
Off its trajectory. Now, this is sometimes referred to as the battering ram attempt, but this particular project is considered actually a little less reliable because previous experiences from space agencies with this exact method, the direct impact approach, had mixed results. So if you recall, NASA conducted a test of the direct impact approach back in 2022. The name of the test was called DART. DART stood for Direct Asteroid Redirection Test. Right?
Dart.
And it shot the dart at, you'll love this character, at a small test asteroid called Diddy Moon.
Diddy Moon?
Diddy Moon.
I like Diddy Moon.
Did you name one of your dogs Diddy Moon?
No.
Bob?
It's Jay. He never admits
I thought
to
it was Jay.
It was a goldfish.
He lied to me. Oh, yeah.
Little Diddy Moon.
Diddy Moon was a much smaller asteroid than Perseus is. So the data revealed by the impact is that, yes, it would be effective on a asteroid that size, but it wasn't clear as if it would do something the size of Perseus. Oh, I failed to mention, Perseus is 2 kilometers in diameter.
But doesn't it barely move? Because it's so far away still.
Yeah, but...
I mean, I know it's close, but it's so far.
2 kilometers is big.
Yeah, but I thought...
Two kilometers is huge.
And then it's so far from us.
But I also thought that, you know, they were worried about hitting something like that could cause just a bunch of smaller objects.
No, that's only if they hit it with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah,
right.
And
that was never really a consideration, even back in the late teens, when they were talking about that even as a possibility for any future asteroid impact. They kind of ruled it out at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, the composition of the asteroid is critical in determining what best approach.
But this is solid, right? So it has to be solid. You can't hit a pile of rubble with an impact method.
Right, because
it'll just stay rubble.
Exactly.
It'll have no effect. So, but the thing is, it's just hard launching a ship fast enough, heavy enough, to hit it with enough momentum to move it.
And also, it's like, yeah, it's 2 kilometers, but that's like really small in the grand scheme of like space.
So this is
but
why
it's really big in the grand scheme of a rocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. True, but they have to like get that calculation perfect to be able to reach it. Problem. Really?
They won't hit it. They won't miss.
Okay.
Yeah, Newtonian mechanics. You don't even need quantum mechanics.
China's craft is significantly bigger than DART's was. So they're relying on the much, much larger size of this to perhaps do the job.
Gotcha.
They're calling it, I don't speak Chinese. If anyone out there does speak dialect of Chinese, forgive me, Tui, which is Chinese for push or shove, which I thought was kind of cute. That's a phonetic spelling. T-U-I with an accent over it is the
how they spelled it
in English.
Don't we have the science to know that the gravity from the ship is going to affect it or not? I mean, it's like we're all I'm kind of sitting on pins and needles, like wanting to get something.
But it's
definitive.
All orbital mechanics, so they'll have to hit it. And then they'll have to follow its orbit for like 2 years to really know what the impact is.
You gotta be, yeah.
That's why they can't wait.
It takes that long for them to know if it's.
That's why they have to do everything at once. They can't wait because every time you wait, we lose the ability to deflect it.
Yeah, it's just too important to screw up. So that's why it's good to have plan A, B, C, as many plans as you can muster.
Is there
more than two? They should do something else.
There's a third.
There's
a third. Now, TUI's going to launch in late 2038, early 2039 is the estimated window for that one. But third prong attack. And Bob, you're going to love this one.
Oh, yeah.
This is called ALDA, A-L-D-A. It's expected to launch in 2040, and it stands for Asteroid Laser Deflection Array. Well, I have to mention it now. We loved Alan Alda when we used to watch him back when television was a thing, and MASH, but he was also a great science communicator. He did Scientific American discoveries on...
You can still get MASH on the AUG.
So good.
You can get it.
So
yeah,
good.
You can.
And you never know what kind of entertainers and stuff are going to become science communicators or great things. I mean, Millie Bobby Brown, became an oceanographer. And who saw that coming? From Stranger Things. I mean, who saw that coming?
She's
but
smart.
In any case, all this is going to be launched in 2040. And it's going to contain 5 space lasers, Bob.
Lasers?
They're going to rendezvous with Perseus.
How powerful.
In 2040. How powerful indeed. 50 petawatts per laser. Ooh, they're going to blast this thing.
Are they going to draw a shark on the side of the
I line? Hope so. If they don't, what a wasted opportunity. The idea being is that you pound this thing with enough laser power, debris, gases get released from
it.
And that creates a little bit of a push. It takes time. This doesn't. You don't just send it up there, fire a couple lasers, and call it a day. They estimate it's going to take 6 to 24 months of laser bombardment. Yeah. In order to get this thing to move those few
Are the lasers space-based or are they Earth-based?
No, they're launching them out there. Space-based.
Oh, they're launching.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Good.
They're
going
to launch them out
there. Is anything going to be in between this laser ship?
Not for long.
Right?
Not at 50 petawatts.
Are we risking anything?
Not at 50 petawatts.
They have a pretty clear shot. They've calculated that.
So that,
they don't
that,
care.
That, it will intercept it in 2043, and so that's the 3-prong attack, and the first launch happened today. So we will keep, obviously, close tabs on this one.
So what do we think the odds are?
With all three of these things going out there, I think very good. Scientists are not really putting out any false hope and saying, it is guaranteed to work or any kind of 99.9% effective, and they're not really saying anything along those lines.
So we're starting at 33%.
Right.
I think each one will knock it down 10% or so. They're hoping to get it like to less than 5%, but that may be the best they could do.
This is an interesting eschatological threat. I mean, it's kind of the first one other than climate change, which has been this slow burn, no pun intended. This is the first real time where I'm feeling like, but this could be how I go out, you guys.
Mm-hmm. This could be how everyone goes
out with you.
You'll be dead by then.
Why do you keep reminding us of that?
I'm sorry, but you have this weird false hope that you're going to live forever.
He's taking his extension therapy.
It's 2035. When is this supposed to hit?
2055, 20 years from now.
20 years from now, and you guys are already in your mid-70s?
Yeah, our farm relatives lived in there.
My dad made it to 86, and he ate whatever the hell he wanted to.
You're closer in age to me.
He didn't meat slugs.
That's right.
That's right.
All right.
My grandmother's right. In the early
cricket biscuits.
We might all go out this way.
We got to stay hopeful, and we got to trust the scientists.
But it just shows you how necessary the asteroid detection system was. Without that early detection system, we would have known it. We wouldn't have known about this till
remember,
it was too
late. Remember, we didn't really have that back in the day, did we?
I think. Well, remember when we interviewed Rusty Swikart? Yeah. So he was working with the UN to develop.
That
this
was the beginnings of it. That was it.
This
happened in our lifetime. Yeah. That's cool.
He was the Apollo astronaut that we talked about.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That was one of the best interviews we ever did.
Bob. How many episodes have we done at this point?
We're over 1,500.
Catalog.
So, Kara, right before the asteroid hits, I'm going to call you and say, I'm still here.
We're still going to be doing the show, my friend.
I'll still be editing it.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, this episode I'll be editing. All right. So you're hopeful, Evan.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
The glass is more than half full.
I mean, it's hard to talk about anything other than this. I know it's kind of been dominating the news, but I think people are just expecting it's going to be taken care of.
Well, what else are you going to do?
We can't obsess about it all.
What are we going to do? Run around like this for 20 years with our arms flailing in the air?
Let's start a cult.
Yeah. I know. We'll kill ourselves.
That'll do.
That'll fix it.
That'll fix everything.
Do it the day before the asteroid, and we'll never know what happened. Like the movie The Mist.
Okay, Bob.
Finally.
Finally. So we've been literally talking about this for 30 years. Remember 30 years ago when you thought that we would have artificial general intelligence by now? And I said, nah.
Keep rubbing it in. It's coming.
have we made any advance?
This looks promising. So
this looks promising.
This is the one.
So deep learning is in the news again.
Again.
Remember, I mean, we used to talk about
right deep learning. Right there with the hydrogen economy, right?
We talked about deep learning a lot in the late teens, early 20s, and it looked promising as hell, really promising. Remember some of those advances? Let me lead with what the news is here, that researchers from the Minsky Institute have announced that they created a viable path to artificial general intelligence. And that they think that using the Moravec's artificial general intelligence test, they think this could be the first AI test.
Which one?
The Moravec artificial general intelligence test.
What happened to the Turing test?
Come on, get with the times, dude.
So general intelligence, just to remind the audience, is a computer that can think like a human being.
Right, it's adaptable super smart in one domain.
Remind me what made
many domains.
What made deep learning deep learning? What is deep learning?
Our deep learning is it's a technique, it's an artificial intelligence technique using neural networks and a lot of training data to see patterns, to see increasingly clearly patterns in data that lots of data that otherwise are very, very hard to see.
And that's why it had all those creative chess moves and Go moves.
Yes. Well, right, and there was Alpha Zero, there was Alpha Go. Those were the systems that were the best chess and best Go players on the planet, but not just like the Alpha Zero was the one that was really fascinating for me because that was a system using deep learning that created a system that was so good in chess that they didn't even test it against people because it was a waste of time. They tested it against the best computer chess program and it kicked its butt. And that human grandmasters that looked at it were like, this thing played like, kind of like a person, but like a person supercomputer hybrid. They said it was such an amazing virtuoso performance. They could not believe how good this was. And this was largely created by deep learning. And so deep learning was all, what are you laughing at? What's going on over there?
It's a hybrid.
Oh, I missed it.
You missed it.
Come on, turn off your AUG.
When Bob talks, I just zone out and I start looking at cat videos. I can't help it.
Cat videos. So.
They're fucking adorable.
So the point was, Jay, deep learning was a huge success in the late teens and the 20s, not only with chess and Go, but also image recognition, autonomous driving, language recognition. I mean, it was an amazing success. But the problem was that it was overhyped. Remember, it just went
like everything is overhyped.
This one's crazy overhyped. It went viral. If you looked for AI classes, everything was deep learning, deep learning, deep learning. And so it really was a victim of its success because people kind of equated deep learning with artificial intelligence in general, right? They thought that deep learning was going to create the first truly artificially general intelligence, which it could never have done because because if you look at it, deep learning was just a tiny little subset of machine learning,
right.
And machine learning was a tiny little subset of AI itself. So yeah. This was just one of the tools of AI that just exploded, and it really created a false impression. So people became disillusioned when deep learning wasn't making all these, right.
So there Bob, as a parallel to this, remember they used to be able to train your brain, you know, to do, you know, what was the name of that? Luminosity or whatever.
Yeah, they said, like, you're playing, you know, playing their stupid little things.
Playing your games will increase your, like, overall intelligence and a whole bunch of things. But it actually only helped you out in that one very specific set of puzzles
you were learning.
I see where you're going with that.
It turns out that the game that you were training on, that's what you got better at.
That's right.
So that's like a metaphor for deep learning versus
like
general intelligence.
Right. But I think the hype, though, was similar to Mercury. I remember there was the hydrogen economy hype, which never manifested.
Right.
Then it was stem cells are going to cure all diseases, which never manifested. Yep. Although, you know, all of these, there is a niche for this. There is, you know, stem cells are having their day, you know, now, 20 years later. Yeah. But it's not going to cure everything. Then we were going to cure everything with CRISPR.
The Twinkie diet.
Was eating
Twinkies. And,
that worked.
Except
I lost
Zombieland
7.
That franchise figured out.
Yeah, man.
And so it's the same thing. But we knew deep learning was never on the path to AGI.
Yeah. Right. And if you, I mean, were kind of an enthusiast in this, you kind of realize that. But the general population really had no idea. So they were really disillusioned.
They don't know the difference between AI and AGI.
Exactly. Right. And it kind of created this little, like, they call it an AI winter, which has happened a couple of times in the past. When AI was first really, really hyped, they thought, well, look, we can create these chess programs. We'll have human intelligence matched in 5 or 10 years.
Well, you
and
remember,
they weren't even close.
When we saw 2001, how we were like, yeah, we'll have that in 30 years.
Seemed totally reasonable. So the expectations were way, way high. Remember that? So just like previous AI winters, it caused like a kind of a little mini winter, and people were very disillusioned. But the research continued. And we see a lot of its successes, and it's not called deep learning or even AI. They called it lots of different things so that people didn't even realize what it was.
Yeah.
And it becomes so embedded in society that you don't even think of it as AI, which is a true test of a system's success.
It's everywhere now.
Right.
It's running the R.
Right.
Deep learning is running, or driving your car.
Right.
It's doing everything, but it's in the background, and nobody talks about it, so they think it's a failure.
But
like, nope, it's running everything.
But it's not AI.
Using.
It's not artificial general intelligence, which is the real sexy thing that's in the movies and the TV shows and what everyone really, really wants, and they're very disappointed. So I think what are you laughing at?
This video is so funny.
He's such a jerk.
Oh, Jay. Some things never change.
Turn on the screen.
Oh, man.
Turn on the scrambler again.
Jay, send me the link.
So one of the things that this Minsky Institute really showed was that consciousness, they think, is really, it's like a three-dimensional thing. You need three things. You need computational intelligence, and that's what deep learning can really help with. But that's only one leg of the tripod. You also need autonomous complexity as well.
What does that mean?
And that means it's like survival drives. It's things like getting out of bed in the morning because you want to get out of bed. You're goal-oriented. You've got intentionality. You want to do stuff. Those are things that...
That's the part that always worries me.
Yeah.
What's your goal is going to be?
Right.
Like
but you need that. That's something you... Consciousness needs that leg of the tripod.
I don't know. I don't really want to get out of bed and I'm conscious.
You claim.
Wow.
Sometimes you do that.
So the third leg, this is the important one.
Twinkies?
Social. the social complexity. That's the one that was really a major driver for human consciousness.
But this is still digital consciousness. Let's be clear. It is.
It's
approximating human consciousness.
Right. And who knows what kind of, who knows how big conscious space actually is and what, you know, synthetic consciousness, what form that will take. But by using the human consciousness as a template, they think it's the only one we have. We've got one real data point there. Well, except for, you know, but it's all like life on Earth and primates and dolphins. So they think that if you link up these AI test beds that have those three legs, so you've got the computational complexity like deep learning gives us with pattern recognition and things like that, and you link that up to another system that has autonomous complexity. Now, these have been developing in the labs for you know, 15, 20 years. And then you hook that to the social complexity, cognitive robotic agents, put them all together.
You get a Cylon.
Then you
don't understand what that means.
So what's the point?
They're joining these different AI test beds that look at AI in a different from a different perspective, putting them together, and they're communicating, sharing data, sharing the things that you need to become, we think, have a consciousness like humans, and they're communicating. And the one drawback with deep learning is that even the ones that were great at chess, they couldn't tell you, well, I looked at all the rules of chess and I played about a billion games, and these are my takeaways. These are my insights into chess. They can't give us those insights because they're not designed to speak and say, this is what my takeaway is. So it's kind of like a black box. Kind of like an oracle where you ask.
Well, we can't learn.
You ask. You really can't. You ask a question. You get an answer, and it sounds like, well, what? That sounds completely unintuitive. How could that even work?
42.
But when you test it, it works.
Basically.
So these systems are now communicating with each other, and this is the crux of this news item is that they're talking together. They're making advances that they never would expect. Not only with computational complexity, but social complexity and autonomous complexity. They're seeing advances they have not seen ever. So they think this could be. We're not there.
Should we be scared?
Not now, maybe later. But now just be happy because it looks like we're finally on the path for some sort of artificial general intelligence.
Now be happy, be scared later.
Yeah,
okay. Well, maybe later.
Enjoy it while it's good.
I mean, if you know, brain imaging has come a long way, and that's like the other, like the, you know, comparing top-down and the bottom-up approaches, I think it could give brain imaging a run for its money because that's another viable way for artificial general intelligence. Because we've got a brain, image it, digitize it, make it work in you know, in digitally, and that's another viable path. That's very promising. But now it has competition. Who knows?
Radiology has been a dwindling specialty lately. Like the techs are able to do a lot of what the physicians used to do because these new
pattern recognition.
Yeah, pattern recognition algorithms are amazing.
In that domain, they're off the hook. Off the hook.
All right. But so here's the thing that concerns me, right? Because and this is going back at least 15 years. When I first heard about this thing, you guys remember Google, right? So they have this is still sort of the state of the art. They could translate any language into any language, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you know how they do that. You translate every language into a machine language, and then you translate that machine language back into any other language. So you don't have to make a connection between every language and each other. You just have to make a connection between every language and this machine language.
That's what's happening here.
But that on steroids. So this is going back at least 15 years.
But it's so glitchy still, isn't it?
No, when you do
that, you lose so much like context and nuance and cultural.
It's getting a lot better because they're actually not translating word for word. They're translating idea to idea. And so you can translate even a euphemism, a metaphor, whatever, into the machine language. But here's the thing. Here's the critical bit. Nobody can speak this machine language. We have no idea.
Well, yeah, of course not, because it's got every.
No, but it's like the
core of everything.
Yeah, it's a separate language that these computers developed.
Yeah.
This is mainly deep learning. They developed it through deep learning, and they understand it, but no human understands this language. So now we have computers talking to each other in this language that we can't understand, and it's like a closed loop. It is another black box. Yeah, Who knows what the hell's going
to pop out
of it?
We can't command them to tell us what is going on.
It's not a human language. We can't.
Yeah, all they can do is translate back into our language,
they'll translate back into English, but they can't communicate to us directly in their language.
And because we can't speak their language.
It's not just binary.
It's not binary. It's
like
abstract
a synthesis
language.
Of everything else. Like it needs all of it to be able to.
No one's been able to crack it.
There's only about 30 movies out there that show how bad that this will turn out. And we just keep pretending like it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, we should just be like, you know, maybe we shouldn't let computers speak to each other in a language that we don't understand. Maybe.
But Jay,
it's been happening on some level.
It's
for
easy
been
to say that, while, but think about all the amazing technology we'd be missing if we just like blocked this from
but,
the
beginning. But not just that. I mean, imagine the things we could learn, even like geoengineering to help with climate change disaster we're entering.
I'm sure they're running the calculations on the rockets to move the
Something tells me the computers don't care too much about carbon emissions. Threat to their.
No, but that's the thing. We are inherently limited through our own human filters and fallacies, right? So these computers are capable of like maximizing algorithms, they don't fall victim to the heuristics that we have to use. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be able to solve problems that we are too limited to be able to solve.
That's the hope.
The question is, what are the unintended consequences?
Right. Yeah, because real day that we'll know we're screwed is when we finally do tell the computers, well, tell us what you're talking about with the other computers. And they go, nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. you'll find out.
Not important.
Right. Maybe they're writing poetry.
But again, I wasn't worried about this when they were, like driving your car and things like that. But when you talk about, we're going to combine the deep learning piece and the social piece with the self-preservation, full autonomous. Yeah. That's the piece that's always concerned me.
Yeah.
And even if it, yeah, remember, I've gone through these phases where at first I'm like, yeah, this is something we need to be worried about. They're like, man, maybe not, because, you know, deep learning, this is with the deep learning phase. Like, deep learning could do anything without without AGI, so we're never going to develop AGI. Then we sort of really learned the hard limits of deep learning. It's like, well, so we may need to go beyond that, but also, like, you don't need self-awareness in order to be a threat to civilization. You know,
right, just mindlessly do something very destructive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the future, they're going to say Skynet went online 2037.
Yeah.
And you know what happened with Skynet and the Terminator, remember that?
Well, didn't Skynet turn into something else? What was the one it turned into? I forget that.
Whatever. That movie
reboot,
sucked.
Remember, from 2012?
Oh, I like it.
Nobody knows. Nobody watched it.
Yeah, I've got it on my 10K screen. It's awesome.
So they have it in 10K?
That's it.
I just watch everything on my OG now. You guys still have screens?
Yeah,
retro.
Yeah, or show retro. You still drive cars, don't you?
I will still occasionally
drive. Sometimes we'll go out and like drive.
I have a classic. Yes.
I still have my license.
The drone cars are the best, though. Come on.
Yeah, I know. That's true. All right, so
self-driving.
If Persis doesn't kill us, the Cylons are going to kill us. Right. Is that what you're telling us?
Maybe.
Yeah. All right.
It's going to be a fun ride either way.
But at least we'll have slug burgers to eat in the meantime.
Way to bring it around there, Steve.
Hey. All right. Been doing this for a while, though. So, Jay, you are going to cover science fiction.
Oh, boy.
Great.
It's time for science or fiction.
So as you know, Kara and I are very openly talk about, you know, we're medicated people. Mm-hmm. You know, I suffer from anxiety. I thought I'd talk about anxiety
today. Extra medicated today, though.
And I thought I would hit you guys with some interesting facts about anxiety and see if you can figure out which one of these is not correct. Okay, so the first one is, so what I'll do is I'll go through these four items.
I'm anxious about this one.
And then, and then I'll quiz the audience, and then I'll let you guys go, and then we'll see if you guys change the audience's decisions. Okay, so the first one is anxiety is more prevalent in developed countries and among women. The second one is anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. The third one, friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them. And the last one, people who suffer from anxiety while having an anxious episode can perceive smells negatively. So if you think that the first one, anxiety is more prevalent in developed countries and among women, if you think this one is the fake, clap when I lower my hand. Okay, four people. The second one, anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. If you think this one is the fake. The third one, friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them. You think this one is the fake. And the fourth one, people who suffer from anxiety while having an anxious episode can perceive smells negatively. Okay, so definitely the crowd here thinks that number two is the fake, the one about anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. So Bob, and don't scroll because all the answers are below.
You're what?
Okay, more prevalent in developed countries than among women. That just makes sense. That's all I'm going to say. Socially anxious people tend to be thought highly of by friends and family. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I realize I know so little about this. I'm just going by what little experience I have. That kind of makes sense as well. And then this last one here, this one could really make sense to me. People who suffer from anxiety while having an anxious episode can perceive smells negatively. I've run into some people who seem to have that happen, although I don't know if they were necessarily suffering from anxiety. But I think I'm going to go with the audience. They seem to be very confident about this. And this is the only one, the second one, that doesn't quite make as much sense to me as the other ones. They're less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. I can't imagine why that would be so. So I'll say that one's fiction.
All right, Steve?
Seems like I wrote a paper on this one.
Novella et al. 2029.
The developed countries and among women, I seem to remember that is the demographics, yeah. Anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. I would guess they were more sensitive to it because they're kind of looking for things. So that may be how that one is the fix. That was my initial thought. People, if you have friends and family, think highly of them. I think they tend to be more kind of overachiever kind of people who are anxious. So that would go along with that. And, yeah, this is like going back maybe 15 or 16 years, but I seem to remember the smell one, that they interpret things in a negative way. It's kind of like, you know, just the brain is just interpreting everything negatively, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So that makes sense. So I was thinking that the facial expression one was the fiction even before the audience chimed in. So I'm going to agree with the audience okay. as well.
Evan?
Well, I'm not trying to be a lemur here, but...
Lemurs don't jump off cliffs. That's a myth.
That's also not a lemur.
Thank
That's
you, Steve.
A lemming.
Lemming.
Oh, lemming. I set them up. They knock them down.
But you don't have to be a lemur either.
You're such a lemur.
Lemur.
So what would be, you piss on your hands and rub it up against trees?
Yeah, let me show you. Oh, boy. Look, I really have no insight to this. I know very little about anxiety issues. I'm a neophyte when it comes to this kind of stuff. I don't think I've experienced any real sensation of anxiety in my life in which I've been, you know, felt like I had to seek help for it or anything. Maybe I have and didn't, but I'll just say what Steve kind of said, not just because it's Steve, but because I had the same thing. Less sensitive to changes in facial expression, that seems to be the opposite. Wouldn't they be more sensitive to changes in facial expression? They're constantly looking for feedback signals and interpreting.
Well, it could be self-absorbed, though, and that's why they're less sensitive.
Maybe.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Maybe, but that was my initial. That was yeah. also my initial reaction, and I have no reason to believe that it's otherwise. So I will go.
All right, Kara, what direction. Do you got?
This is a tough one because I'm not sure I agree with the crowd. I do agree that anxiety is more prevalent among women. I know depression is more prevalent among women, and the neurotic personality style is more prevalent among women, and anxiety and neuroticism tend to, I don't really like that word anymore, but they still do use it in the literature. I also think that people who have anxiety might perceive a smell more negatively, just because they're, I think that vigilance that happens, and also, like, you specifically said while they're having, you didn't say panic attack, but I'm assuming it's something along the lines of, like, a severe experience of anxiety, they're going to catastrophize everything. Like, that's a common experience. My problem is with the two middle ones, and I'm kind of on the fence between them right now.
Really?
So anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. On the whole, anxious people, I don't know, because there's so many different types of anxiety. So I think that if somebody is actively experiencing panic, they're going to be way less sensitive because they're not dialed into what somebody looks like at all. But somebody who might be socially anxious might be more sensitive to a change because they're worried about feedback and how they're being perceived, right? Like being on anxiety is kind of like being high and you're like, everybody's looking at me. They all think I'm saying something stupid. Like that can be an experience of somebody who's experiencing social anxiety. On the flip side of that, friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them. You specifically said socially anxious people. Socially anxious people tend to withdraw from interaction in public. And I think that sometimes there is actually a lot of stigma around social anxiety that actually leads to people thinking that that person is antisocial, that person's not very nice. That person kind of comes across like they don't really like me, or they think they're better than me.
No one cares.
So I do think sometimes friends and family of socially anxious people might actually stigmatize them a little bit and think negatively of them. So that's kind of where I'm on the fence, because I think either of those could be true. My fear is that, or my concern is that anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions is a broad statement. Anxious people on the whole are less sensitive to facial expressions. Maybe, maybe not. So,
come on, be a lemur. Come on.
Yeah, be a lemur.
I might be wrong in the end. Just to be clear, I do not study anxiety and I don't have anxiety. I am medicated for depression and I don't really work with anxiety in any of my clinical work. It's not an area that I research at all. So basically what I know is just what I know from textbooks.
Yeah.
And I've never specifically come across these studies. But there's a part of me that thinks there is still a stigma around socially anxious people. And so I'm going to say that people actually don't think more highly of them. And that's, I don't know if that's the fiction, but I could be wrong. You guys could totally have it because I'm on the fence about those.
All right, let's go through again. Okay. I'm going to ask the audience here. So we'll go to the first one again. Anxiety is more prevalent in developed countries and among women.
That one?
Yes.
Six-year conviction.
Independence. I love it. Yes.
Apparently, the rest of the audience was too anxious to clap.
Yeah, exactly.
Anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty close to the first one.
I don't know. Let's listen to the next one.
People shifted.
Friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them.
Oh, boy.
They're a definitely influenced.
But, guys, I might have led you astray. I'm really sorry.
People who suffer from anxiety while having an anxious episode can perceive smells negatively. All right, did you feel that those two were closer?
Those two were a lot closer than initially.
And then they were asked again real quick?
No, I think we'll just call it a tie.
I think we shifted it to more tied in between the two.
All right, yeah. I will start with the last one. People who suffer from anxiety while having an anxious episode can perceive smells negatively. So people with anxiety disorders tend to label neutral smells as bad smells. Mm. So this one is science. Professor Win Lee explains, in typical odor processing, it is usually just the olfactory system that gets activated, but when a person becomes anxious, the emotional system becomes part of the olfactory processing stream. Mm. That is fascinating.
Wow.
That's so cool. your anxious consciousness, it taps into the way that your olfactory processing happens.
But what about the other areas, or what about the other senses? I mean, does
I think
it
does
also
affect
impact?
Other senses too. But it might make sounds more shrill or more difficult.
But it makes sense that it would be tied to smells because your olfactory centers are closer to the limbic areas of your brain tied to emotions. So that's why when you smell something, it could bring you back decades. Just that one trigger of a smell can bring you back to a memory that's literally.
They're also very fast, right? Your olfaction, because it doesn't pass through the thalamus like everything else. It's a very fast sense compared to some of the other senses. Yeah. Oh.
So
it's evolutionarily
question,
very old.
I don't know, Ev. I don't know if it can hijack the other senses as well. As an anxious person, I would tell you that, you know, if I'm having a really bad panic attack, everything is catastrophized.
Acute.
Yeah, everything's acute. Everything. So I would imagine.
More exaggerated.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean,
negative as well.
But it's also something with my personal experience. I'm very much insular; like I'm turned into myself. I'm not appearing out into the world. I'm just looking
at
what's going on.
Might not be looking at face.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go to number three: friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them.
Crap.
I'll just read this, and then you guys will discover what the truth is. So people with social anxiety usually think they don't do well in social situations, but new research indicates otherwise. So this one is science. Friends of those with social anxiety tend to think very highly of their nervous companions. This is possibly due to how sensitive anxious people can be while they're in a social environment, meaning that they think before speaking and always consider the feelings of others.
So wait, you're saying that they think more highly of them than they think of themselves.
Well, the socially anxious
not
person,
what the item said.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, listen.
It just says highly.
Friends and family of socially anxious people tend to think highly of them.
Yeah.
So a socially anxious person is actually, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, they're scoring points with friends and family because they're tuned into their politeness and to the other people more because they're because of their social anxiety, they're reading everyone and they're analyzing their environment more actively than a person that doesn't have the anxiety.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I will now go to anxious people are less sensitive to changes in facial expressions. This one is the fake.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
So the audience got it. Good job.
Good job, guys.
I picked this one because the way that I did this, I tested myself on all of these facts. So I was reading, I read them, and I thought to myself whether or not I agreed. This was kind of, the website I found was kind of like a what do you think the truth is, and it was interesting. Okay, I thought that this one it was the opposite because of what you and I said, because when you're having a panic attack, you are so, like, your surroundings almost don't matter because, you really do kind of get this haze that comes over you and you're just, like, in your own head and it's, you know, it's very insular. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that people who are anxious, so they say people with anxiety are quicker to perceive changes in facial expressions than those without anxiety. However, they are less accurate when perceiving their meanings.
Gotcha.
So they can misinterpret them,
but they probably interpret them
negative.
They
make them negative.
Right,
yeah,
of course. So it's easy for those who struggle with anxiety, overthink, and jump to conclusions. This may lead to tension and conflict in relationships.
Yeah.
So very good, the audience. You guys did a great job. Except you, who I noticed didn't clap because you were thinking probably like I do. So the first one, anxiety is more prevalent in developed countries and among women. This one is science. The U.S. is considered to be one of the most anxious nations on Earth. Sociologists blame the increased number of choices we have. The increased number of choices that we have. So modern society in general. We have,
and it's getting worse.
That we have so many choices in front of us that it adds up to emotional stress throughout the day. That you get more and more stress. You got so much, you scroll through Amazon and you don't just have one pair of socks. You've got hundreds of pairs of socks and you have to think about it and think about it and think about it. So,
well, and this gets to the confluence of AI and the OG, social media, is you have virtual assistants who make decisions for you.
Yeah.
And people love that because it reduces their anxiety,
exactly.
Reduces their choices. And now you have not only targeted ads, you're allowing whoever's in charge of the OG to live your life for you, like to lead you around and make decisions for you. And at first it's like the things you don't really care about that much or like whatever. But how intrusive is that going to get? Mm-hmm. Think about it. Again, you will trade convenience for security, for privacy.
Yeah.
Imagine how much we'll trade to really reduce our cognitive load. That is really what a psychologist would call that, right? Cognitive load is like how much work you have to do to get through your day, to get through a task, to do something. The AI system, software in general, it's all engineered, or it should be if it's good, if it's working well, to minimize cognitive load, mm-hmm. right? Good movie making is about minimizing mm-hmm. cognitive load, right, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Mm.
Right, so I remember, back when we were still doing films, we learned because we got a course from our friend at Pixar who said if you follow like the action on a movie screen, like remember the movie screens, you follow the action. If one scene ends over here, the next scene picks up here, right? It doesn't pick up over here.
Yeah, meaning that where your eyes are.
Yeah, they know where your eyes are. They're following your eyes, and then they're making sure your eyes are following the action from one scene to the next.
Less work for
you. Because it's less work. If you have to suddenly hunt for where the action pick up, oh, it's over here, that's cognitive load. It takes you out.
That's why 360 films are hard for people. Yeah. Like, it's hard to catch on to a 360 movie because you have to...
Or virtual films. Remember the virtual films, which never really took off.
You have to find the action as opposed to...
Yeah, you're like constantly looking around looking for where the action is. It could be fun, but it's high cognitive load. You've got to be in the mood for that. So now we're just going to be surrounded by systems that will reduce our cognitive load for us, and that's like crack, right? You who won't do that?
That's like somebody cutting your lawn for you.
Yeah.
How could you not love that?
Right. Right.
I had
the lawn bots.
My wife and I were going into overload to get the yard cleaned up for the fall, and we hired some people to come and take down some trees, like from the tornado, I remember standing, I have a cup of coffee, I'm looking out the window, I'm watching a few guys work in my yard, and I'm just like, I love all of you guys. Thank you so much. This is such a pleasure,
I'm in here, you're out there.
Yeah. I told you to get robots to do that. I look out my window and I don't want cutting my lawn.
I don't want robots in my yard.
You're still
get off my lawn.
Still not time with the robots?
No.
So you get emailed some or v-mailed some questions, if we want to take some virtual questions. I have one which I want to bring up. So did you guys all get your flu shot this year? Everybody get their flu
mm-hmm.
shot?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
It's not really flu season down here, right?
They got theirs 6 months ago, right?
You got your flu
quad.
Yeah, so, the quad, that that was the standard. Actually, remember the tetravalent vaccines?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flu vaccines. But now we have the universal flu vaccine, which came out in 2032. So the question comes from Haywood, and Haywood asks... You have a problem?
He got you. He totally got you.
I'm sorry.
I'm swallowing.
Did you not think I was going to lose it?
I wonder if I
know why that's funny.
No,
we don't have to tell them.
You can't say. Jesus, stop it.
What was that emailer's last name, Steve?
No. He left it off the email.
He didn't say. Just the first name all
over the email.
So anyway, he wants to know if we should get the new universal flu vaccine because, there's now the anti-vaxxer fear-mongering around this one, right? Because it's all genetically modified, et cetera. So yes, Haywood, you should get the universal flu vaccine. Because even the tetravalent vaccine, so every year, you know, back in the day, up until 2 years ago, they would have to. So, like, if you're from the United States, like we are, you know, they used to give us whatever strains of flu you guys were getting, and then you get the flu, whatever the strains we're getting 6 months before, because that was the lead time to make the vaccines. And there's, of course, you know, hundreds of strains, and they're just guessing, and they sort of increased the number of strains that they were covering per vaccine, because some sort of became permanently embedded. So, yeah. Like, you have to cover the certain strains every year, then you have to add one or two that you think are going to come.
But that left out any potential mutations.
Yeah, so, yeah. But it was always, so the when the vaccine matches, it's like 95% effective, but yeah. The mismatch could reduce that to 40% on bad years. It might only be 40%.
Yeah, there have been years like that, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah,
very bad.
Where you got the vaccine, you still got the flu. It sucked.
So they've been researching for about 40 years a universal flu vaccine. The problem has always been that the parts of the flu vaccine that are the flu virus that are universal are hidden from antibodies. And so the immune system can't get access to that because all of the stuff that changes, you know, from strain to strain is in the way. But they did finally figure out a way to crack into that, to get access to the universal bits. And so they've been now producing universal flu vaccine. And if you get that, you are resistant to every flu strain. And so you only need to get it about once every 5 years, right? And if you get that for once every 5 years, and now it's like every year it's 95% effective.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yes, get it. You should absolutely get it. Right.
We all did.
Yeah, duh. I know. I know. I made you get it.
We're the SGU.
Still hurt a little, though.
It's still a vaccine. It's still a shot. All right, Evan, before we close out the show, give us a quote.
Science is the greatest thing known to humans. Through science, we have been able to seize a modicum of control over the otherwise natural state of chaos throughout the cosmos. It is truly the most stunning achievement by a life form that emerged from the dust of the stars. In order for us to be the best stewards of our universe, we must continue the pursuit of science, and may it forever be our torch to light our way forward. Spoken by Dr. Alyssa Carson. She's a NASA astronaut, and she was the first inhabitant of Armstrong Station on the moon in 2031.
Thank you guys all for joining me for this special episode, and thank all of you for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.
And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.